My name's Billy Humphrey. I'm from South Baltimore. My dad originated from a place called Steele, Alabama. They moved here during the Industrial Revolution to a community named first named Westport and later to Brooklyn. My grandma's house on 6th Street is the place that I look to often and call my home place. It was there that I sat on the stoop. It was some of the fondest memories of me as a kid, man, because oftentimes I would get sent to grandma's house so that I didn't have to deal with everything that was going on at my house. It's the challenges many kids face. It's a challenge I faced. My mom, she came from a place called Bonnie Blue, Virginia. It's a coal mine in town. Again, her family, my grandmother and grandfather, packed up during the Industrial Revolution and came to Baltimore to work at the steel plants and the shipyards and as boilermakers. And it was a challenge growing up. My dad joined the Army right out of school, and he went to Vietnam. Coming out of Vietnam, he ended up marrying my wife, and they had a beautiful baby boy named Little Billy. Matter of fact, they called me Little Billy or Billy Ray oftentimes because my dad is Billy Jean Humphrey. I'm Billy Ray Humphrey. He didn't want me to be a junior, but he wanted me to have his namesake. So I grew up, all of my family calling me Billy Ray. My dad, coming back from Vietnam, though, brought a lot of trauma. He turned to alcoholism. The reason I point to the stoop at my grandmother's house is one of my fondest places because, unfortunately, my dad became really addicted to alcohol and began to dabble in other substances. It was common that I grew up not originally knowing what it was, but I now better know that they grew up with bongs and smells that maybe many did or did not grow up with. But my dad was one of those guys. When he got drunk, man, he was mean. You know, there's mean drunks, there's happy drunks, and then there's sloopy drunks. If you ever get there, I hope you're the happy or the sleepy kind. But my dad, he was a mean one. And oftentimes when he would come home drunk, he would pick fights with my mom. Unfortunately, the memories I have at my home were ones of parents fighting. My parents separated, got back together, separated, got back together. As a matter of fact, by the time I got to high school, I graduated high school, I had lived in 13 different homes that I can remember. I went to 8 different schools, 5 elementary, 2 middle, 1 high school. But during my 4 years at Lansdowne High School, in South Baltimore, I lived in 3 different places. As a matter of fact, strangely enough, I guess they didn't check it back then. I'm not 100 years old, but I'm a little more than 50. I don't know that I'll make it to 100 like United Way, but there you go. But it was a crazy time because I lived in Baltimore City and Anne Arundel County and Baltimore County. You know, we at some point started doing a little well and ended up in Glen Burnie. That was like moving up, you know. But always the stoop at my grandma's house with all of my cousins who would gather there and family functions or just when I got to spend the weekends at grandma's made all the difference in my life. My parents increasingly started dabbling in drugs and alcohol. By the time I was in 7th grade, my dad was in a very severe car accident. He was ejected from the car. He had brain damage, flown to shock trauma, major brain surgery. It took months and months, almost a full year before he recovered. Coming out of that after a broken collarbone, a broken leg, head brain damage, he had a plastic piece in his brain about the size of my palm. He came out of the hospital with those good old prescription pain pills. And it was within a very short period of time, what became a pain pill opioid addiction became a street level heroin addiction. It was rough. It was hard. You know, you stop going to grandma's house at some point. So then I got to be in the middle of it. From 7th to 9th grade, I slept on a sleeping pad. We lived in a 2-bedroom apartment. My sister was 4 years older and she was a teenager, so she got her own bedroom. So I slept just literally on a sleeping pad on the floor for those years there when we were living in Baltimore Highlands. It was rough. It was tough. It was challenging. I'm not here so much to talk to you about that. But my parents ended up getting busted, right, for stealing stuff in an old department store called Ames. Does anybody know Ames? And I think they're out of business now, right? It was the Walmart before the Walmart here in Maryland. So, or the Target of the day. But it was really cool because they got, well, not cool. They got busted. But they, back in those days, I'm in high school. They would steal things. They'd bring it to me. You know, if I wanted anything, I had to buy it. So I started working. I was like selling newspaper subscriptions, door to door back in the day. Can you help me go to college? Kind of stuff. And if anybody had their door knocked on back then, it might have been me. And I would buy this stuff. I didn't know what I was doing. I was buying the stuff my parents were stealing to support their drug habit. When it finally came to my revelation, I was like, oh, time out. I ain't doing that no more. And but it was the end of my junior year in high school. My parents got busted for stealing at Ames. And they got called before a judge. And he said, hey, you can go to diversion court. You can go to rehab or you can go to jail. My dad had already been in jail. That's how we ended up in Baltimore Highlands. It was a challenge. It was a difficult, right? But during that 6 months of court-ordered drug treatment, my parents, like, something happened. They became really cool. They actually cared. They started inviting me to the church my grandmothers raised them in and took me to as a boy. And I was on a journey of sort of just living as my own from as far as I mean, I started working at 14, and I just worked all my life. I'm still working. Did you ever get to retirement, by the way? But somebody was talking about that earlier, and I was like, I'm ready to go. Just wild, and it was during that experience that I experienced some light in my own life. I heard somebody talking about light earlier, and it reminded me that, you know, a little bit of light goes a long way. As a matter of fact, if you can see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, you can have some hope. And when you got hope, that's when you're like, oh boy, this is good. Because I can hope for a better day. I can hope for a better tomorrow. And now hope is what inspires me to go and experience that transformation. At the end of my junior year in high school, my world changed. My parents were on court order methadone. I got an old school church bulletin. I should have brought it this morning. It's got my parents' names in there as the greeters. You know, the one who was violent as a drunk, the one who smoked often in the living room, and the one who ended up on the street putting needles in their arms, between their toes and in their groins. My dad died when I was in college. I always say I got out of poverty because I borrowed my way out. And I got married some years later. I told my wife I had an alimony check to this lady named Sally May. Fortunately, I don't owe her anymore. But I got out of poverty because I borrowed my way out of poverty. But as growing up as a boy, my pen, look, I had food stamps before they had the EBT card and the liver. You know, I had the old school stamps in a book. They would let kids use it. I'd walk down to the corner store with my dad's or, you know, my parents' food stamps, and I'd be like, can I get some of this or some of that? You know, back then I could buy my dad's cigarettes. It was cool. I thought I was cool walking down there with my little stamps, and then I started getting made fun of, you know. And it was all the typical stories that we look at that address and impact. I was an Alice family. My dad worked. He worked enough to get laid off. That was his plan. He was a boiler maker. He would take jobs, get laid off, and gladly live off of unemployment. At the whole time in between drinking, drugging, all this kind of stuff, I got to watch this guy. He's going to tell me to stop at some point. You're really not the bad people. Just the timekeeper. But from the bottom of my heart, I have no idea, but I just remember as a boy, we would go over here to get health, you know, to the health clinic back then. We would go over here if mom had to renew her food stamps, or over here to get her food stamps, or over here. And before I know it, I sat in the back seat of a lot of dilapidated cars, or my grandmother, or my aunt or uncle, who would pick us up to get us wherever we are, depending on whether or not we had transportation at the time or not. And I didn't understand it fully. And I went off to college, and I studied, they mentioned I was a pastor. I studied Bible and theology. I'm a Bible nerd at heart, okay? So, but leaving all that aside, I didn't didn't know that I was going to end up back in my community around 2000 in the same community, Brooklyn, just around the corner from where I sat on the stoop as a boy. I ended up pastoring the church that my grandmothers took my mom and dad to when they were kids, that took me to when I was a kid. That, you know, as I got older, I only went to at Christmas and Easter and one other Sunday, usually Mother's Day. I call them CEOs, if you know what I mean. So Christmas, Easter, and one other Sunday. So, and we were a church, like many churches all throughout the city, and faith communities who were addressing food insecurity. And they were talking about sort of just barely solving problems and systemically sort of having to, I'm trying to remember the exact language that you used about sort of just, you know, just enough. We sort of help folks just enough to survive. We make survival easy instead of teaching thriving and living. And so I a couple years, actually it was probably about 2015, something was stirring inside of me, and I said, you know, I'm tired of just being a handout. I want to be a hand up. And I wanted to know what that looked like, and I didn't know what that was going to look like. And so I began to research and study and find best practices, because I said there's got to be some models out there that are doing it differently than just a handout and a handout and a handout. There are some people I've been feeding for years, and I'm ready to stop feeding them, because it's not that I want to stop feeding them. I want them to stop having the need to come to us for help to feed them. And so what do you do? What does that look like? And I think, you know, that became the birth of what is now City of Refuge, which is now my full-time employment. I'm a bivocational pastor here at City of Refuge. Our mission is, are you ready, that we exist to bring light, hope, and transformation to individuals and families. And I'm grateful to be here. I've had the opportunity to speak last year on a panel, and then they invited me back. I'm not sure. I'm humbled. I'm honored. Thank you. But United Way has been with me on this journey that I've been on for probably about 12 years now. I first met them at Ben Franklin High School. We were trying to get them to help pay for us to do this crazy idea called a family center for teen parents. And here we are years later, where they've served a number of, you know, teen parents. And they've stayed in that community, and then they brought family stability, and then they brought, I'm trying to remember all the programs, and I don't have my notes in front of me. All kinds of other stuff. Talk to United Way, they'll tell you about it. And they've walked with us along the way. We had the opportunity to apply and be selected to be one of the OGs of Neighbors United in the Lansdowne, Baltimore, Hollins community. I got to go to another one of my homes. Well, if you look at the map, really, Brooklyn, and even though it's in the city, and Lansdowne and Baltimore Hollins, even though it's in the county, the reality is they're not very far apart. It's right down Patapsco Avenue, the Patapsco Extension. And we got to do that work, and now we got to do, that's how many minutes I have left. I'll buckle up. We got some time. So how wonderful it is. And at the end of the Neighbors United, after we did a lot of listening and a lot of learning and a lot of community building around power and influence, especially in the immigrant population of Baltimore, Hollins, and Lansdowne, we were selected to start the Family Stability Program. We run a program in partnership with United Way at Ben Franklin High School. It's an out-of-school type program called HYPE, and we do Chosen Leaders. HYPE is a trauma-informed care model where we go in, we teach youth to mix and make music and tell their story on a mobile device. Then we invite them back to our youth center on 9th Street, which is three streets away from where I sat on the stoop. And a bunch of other little billies are learning to tell their story in a positive way. And they're addressing their own trauma in their own way, very differently than I. I don't know that they'll borrow their way out of poverty like I did. But City of Refuge has decided that we want to create an environment where we can come alongside people in poverty and crisis. And we can serve as a one-stop shop for people in poverty. So we want to bring all the partners that do good work in, around the city to come have a place in South Baltimore under our roof and do it with us, because we can't do it alone. And I don't know how I would have gotten to where I am here and now, except that somewhere along the way, United Way and many, many others trusted me to lead and to start. And I now have a wonderful team. And as they said, it's kind of crazy when you think about the numbers. But if you've been here today, you know numbers do matter, but stories do too. Because every one of those numbers represents a story. And so when you think about the fact that you've come alongside our organization to now serve over 9,000 unique households across about 9 or 10 neighborhoods in South Baltimore just over the last 3 years, some of that was just with maybe a bag of food. Some of that has been comprehensive around supportive housing, around workforce development and job training. Some of that is around our youth empowerment and the work we do there, as well as anti-trafficking. We work directly with survivors. If you don't know anything about South Baltimore, it's really known as an open-air sex trade, open-air drug trade. It is systemically disadvantaged around economics and economy and money. It is one of those places in Baltimore, like East and West and South, that has just for years and years and years been poor. And I say, let's go out there and stop dealing dope in those streets, and let's go out there and start dealing some hope in those streets. So I gotta close. So you got, I am a pastor and I am an executive director of a nonprofit, but at the core of what I do, because I'm also a father and a dad, but I'm really also, I'm just a hope dealer. I'm a young kid who grew up in the stoop, who instead of turning to a life of dealing drugs to make a living, I turned to a life of dealing hope to make a living.